You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Every Wednesday on Business Sense, we light up the airwaves with stories of grit, vision, and the beautiful chaos of building something from scratch. And tonight, we cross the border into Lesotho to meet a man who is literally turning waste into opportunity. Temogo Khatledi, founder of Buhlweki Enterprises, saw a pile of discarded tires not as a problem, but as a beginning of a solution. A business that is creating jobs, cleaning the environment, and driving innovation in an industry most of us overlook. His journey is one of courage, community impact, and refusing to wait for change, building it instead. You see what I did with that refusing bit? Temogo, welcome to Business Sense.
Hello, hello. How are you? How are you, ma'am?
I'm doing well. How about you?
No, I'm blessed. I'm blessed. I'm blessed.
Tonight, we're going to learn not just how you built your business, right, but how you built the resilience and the vision and the courage it took you to get here. Are you ready to take us on that journey?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. I'm here.
All righty. Temogo, I've heard Temogo before.
Yes.
Not Temogo. So do you want to tell us what your name means?
No, but I think it's something that you're probably accustomed to.
Okay.
But it's just that because it's not such a well-renowned name. So yeah. Especially in Setswana, it's Olemoha, Temogo.
Yes.
But now in Sesotho, it's Temogo wa Lemoho. You recognize something. So it's basically, it's just that with the H and the O, it changes the demographics altogether. It's as if it's a totally new different name.
Yeah. So you're saying Temogo means to recognize.
Yes, to recognize.
How apt that you see tires and the rest of us are like, okay. And you recognize a business opportunity. Talk to us about the beginnings of Buhlweki Enterprises.
It's been a tough journey, ma'am. It's been a tough journey. It still is. But I think it's even ironic that this is on a Christian platform and on a radio platform. I think the first thing I'll really say, somebody would always ask me, but I mean, why would you think of tires? I mean,
yes.
what was the inspiration? Where did that come from? Where's the logic? And I'm like, I think the first line of reference really is, when the big book says those that seek shall find, it really is. I think that's the really foundation of it. I can't even say I'm gonna try and bring some another analogy, but that's just the foundation. So I when I was in varsity, because obviously I was in varsity in South Africa, most time passes almost just plus or minus 10 years ago. So I was set out to look. I was trying to look for an opportunity that probably I could get into.
Yeah.
Even though I didn't get into the opportunity after working for corporate for over 5 years, but that was the first. So I started just trying to look for something that is more that's sustainable.
Yeah.
That's with maybe less competition, and I actually thought I would get something that was an easier area to a barrier to entry into the market. I was wrong. It was very, very expensive. I was very capital intensive, very quite complex of a business, especially from someone that comes from a commercial perspective. I'm a commercial guy. I did strategic management, BCom, bachelor's of commerce, obviously with other courses. But the rationale is this is a fully integrated engineering space. What I mean? So, yeah. But I think conceptually, that's when it started. I started looking. Started doing research, and then obviously I think another aspect that is also quite profound is they always say we start we always look for opportunities quite further from us. We really think of solutions to be something that how could I say something from Elon Musk or Einstein, something crazy. You know, it usually isn't. You know? Honestly, usually isn't. So I think the first also aspect that I had is I happened to, well, that was also back then, work for a waste management business just as a before I went to university also. So that's some a skill that I got. And then when I worked there, so the first thing was to say, okay, what do I know? You know, what have I done? And I'm like, okay, I've been in space, just I was doing just, you know those, and this is actually a funny aspect, and I'm just going to raise a race card here. You know, a lot of these other European people and white people and other people, they get to do those holiday, what you call those, like maybe say holiday jobs that they do while they're not working.
Vec work.
And people, those menial type of works, you know. Yeah. So just to make an extra buck, someone can go work at a restaurant. Someone can go work. A lot of these other, let's say, why people do that, and we take that for granted, you know. So that's how what I also did. I was not in school for that period of time, just waiting to go to school, and I was at a break, so I just went to do menial. I was literally doing very menial work. I was working at a scrap business, a waste management business, and. That's how I learned about it, just as normal waste business. You know where those people take old cans and aluminium?
Yes.
I'm sure you see that a lot.
Yes.
I used to work there. And I didn't even have a qualification. And it was quite a messy place. But
wow.
Look, and I was studying comp. I just thought, okay, let me just do something that I can do in the interim before, because schools will be opening in February in South Africa, you know. So, but our years are different. So this is literally years ago. So I did that as like holiday work, you know. And worked there for almost 6 months
before.
So we finished, like, maybe let's say in June the year ends, because we use a European system, and then that's literally how it works. So the logic then started from that. So I did that menial work, and that menial work years later helped me, because that was something that I had a bit of experience.
Yes, it felt like a full circle moment.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It was like a closed loop. And then because it was menial, like I said to you, it had nothing to do with my career. It was totally nothing to do with my career. I was just working there, and then I was working in the office, in the admin office. I ended up working in the admin office. I was still working as one of the workers there. Then soon I went to admin office, just doing a bit of the admin, learned a bit of how these guys, because these guys were already like setting up, buying scrap, and then selling it over to South Africa. You know, so those. I just learned a bit of those expert issues. So when I was literally looking for an opportunity, I thought to myself, what do I know? You know, this is something that I know that I've done. I might not be an expert in it, but, you know, it was a spark of the searching, you know. So then you start filtering opportunities. Say, okay, no, there's waste. No one is doing this type of waste. And then really that's where the genesis started. But like I said, it was a build-up over the years to actually get to this idea, but it sparked from that, you know, of on just continuously looking and praying to God to say, okay, what can be more sustainable?
Yeah,
let's look at plastic. Okay, let's look at this. Okay, is there a market for this? So now, when I was breaking this down, you're breaking this down now with school knowledge and experience from the workspace. So you start filtering properly, using the right matrices to assess an opportunity. I don't know if you hear what I'm saying.
Oh, you've said so much, and so many of the things you've said had me questions, like had me getting questions in my mind. Firstly, what did you study?
Like I studied BCom. I studied Bachelor of Commerce, Strategic Management.
And what did you do in corporate for 5 years?
I was working in telecoms. I was a key accounts manager. I used to work for Vodafone.
And what is it that made you leave corporate then? And you know why I'm asking, right? It's because I hear from a lot of entrepreneurs. I work with a lot of entrepreneurs, and a lot of them will tell you about an agitation of sorts. This thing that just keeps calling at them, whether they're getting a promotion or they're changing jobs, whatever it is that they're trying to do to try and numb it, this thing just keeps calling them, keeps pulling at their, tugging at their heartstrings. Did the same thing happen to you?
100%. That's why I started off the journey saying this just emanates from finished varsity, which is literally like 10 years ago. So I'm just saying before that, because then that's when I did that, and then I went to varsity and then went to work. But now this idea just kept coming through to say, look, but you have to do something that's impactful, you know, something that's as much as you're doing well in corporate, but you want to do something impactful, do something that's sustainable, and something that also glorifies God. You know, our God. So we can't be hiding behind corners. You know, we need to be heads. So I think that agitation also came through for me. I don't want to lie. And it and now that it, you couldn't, and the opportunity that I kept seeing kept getting louder in my face.
Yes, yes. It's like when you're talking about a car, you're like, oh, you know, a BMW would be nice. Next thing you know, Ivo, when did so many people buy this?
Every day. Every day. Because as if all other cars disappeared, you know?
Yes.
Oh, what?
Yeah. That's so, interesting.
So I think I was just answering your question there. That's really it kind of emanated from, to say, look, this opportunity still came. And then I think in reverse, like I'm saying, this is also something that's quite profound. I also realized that we also need to learn how to run businesses properly from working.
Oh,
you know, need to work for somebody first, and then that really helps. And I think when someone said that to me, actually that was my dad, he says, no, I understand you're crazy about business, but go work for someone. I was so furious. But I think looking back, I realized that if I had not worked for corporate, I wouldn't be able to run business the same way I'm running it now, you know.
What you're saying is so profound. And let me tell you why. So I was at a career event from this other church, I think 2 weeks ago. They'd asked me to go speak there. And a lot of the young people stood up and were like, I don't want to work for anybody. I want to be my own boss. And, you know, one other older man in the panel said, I would really advise that especially if you want to have your own business, go work under somebody else as well. And what you're saying makes so much sense, because when I also left corporate in 2023, before I left corporate, I was working there and I had two jobs, well, three, but two really officially. One, when I started out, I was a sales analyst.
Okay.
When I tell you that I learned what a pipeline is, literally how you begin, I guess, warming up a lead, how you even get a lead to begin with, and all the stages that a sale has to go through before you close the deal. That is all I was doing as an analyst, right? Just making sure, how do we improve pipeline time and all of that. Then I moved to product development, where we were now developing products for these people we're selling to. I run my own business now. And can I tell you that product development is a very big part of what I do?
No, I mean, just to chip in there, and there's a logic about it. Look, this is where there's a statement that I like about a man called Andrew Carnegie. He says, I'm sure you probably heard him. So Andrew Carnegie says, those who do more work than they're paid for will soon be paid for less than they do. That always just blew my seat, because look, when you're working for someone and you work so hard and you invest yourself trying, and you actually learn, you work as if this is your baby. You're learning how to take care of your own baby, you know. So most of the time when we're working, we just feel like we're just ticking the box. It's not even my company. You let things slide. So you get used to not closing the loop for yourself. You know what I mean? And now it looks like you sort of have some magical whip when you're there. Even I'm telling you the truth. Even a simple sales pitch, like you're saying, like a pipeline, getting the sale done, may seem like an easy exercise, I tell you. But that's what people can't sell, because there's many tactics in which you could follow suit.
Literally.
Following up on a client, making sure the client does not feel agitated when you follow up. That's also also not feeling agitated because you're following up. Because you know some deals you close after a year. A whole year. And you've been, and you understand what I'm saying? And you learn that from corporate. I was laughing at a colleague of mine saying, look, you know, if I never worked for corporate, I wouldn't understand how to smile with a client that owes me. And literally owe me for a long time. And I still smile when I give them a call or when I meet them by street. You understand what I'm saying? So many things, like payment terms, like there's 90 days, there's 60 days. You can't just then start shouting, hey, you owe me. It's not going to work out.
No. And
they sound so simple, you know what I'm saying? But they come together now that you've seen it being done, you know, then you you just end up, everything just starts falling suit by God's grace, like a deck of dominoes, because you've done it for something else.
So good. So good. And I think that should also give courage to somebody who is working and has been thinking about business or scared because they feel like they'll start from scratch. Some, if not most of those skills are so transferable. You just have to know what to do with them. And I think maybe this is the problem because we feel like we are cogs in a system and we don't realize the value we're actually bringing into that space. And that's why we don't see how that very value can be translated into any other space we go to, especially if it's something we care deeply about.
Look, I'm going to agree with you. And I'm also going to bring race to it. And I'm just going to bring it from a slight perspective. Why is it, Bangi, that Indians can always run businesses? Why is it that, say, other foreigners can always run businesses? Yeah. I have a point I'm going to put across here.
Yeah.
It means, you must be a specialist in an industry to understand it to bits.
Mm.
But if you have the basics of business, you can always learn.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I just feel like that's what people need to understand. Once you have the basics, you have your basic accounting principle, you understand your cash flows, you understand your raw materials. Once you have that particular overview of the current business that you're in with whatever skill that you learned there, then I think you're in a good space to start something. That's number one.
Yeah.
And then two, I also say this to a lot of people and say, if you have a good job by God's grace, you are basically, you have capital. You have seed capital for your business.
Mm.
Look, you know how it is to get a personal loan when you're employed? You know how easy it is to get? So I think these are some of the decisions that we do as youth. We probably, and I'm not even saying it's a bad thing, you know, we probably just buy liabilities that by that time, and you can literally fund your business. When I was in corporate, I funded my businesses while I was still in corporate. It was hard. Don't get me wrong.
Yes.
It was hard. Like I remember one of the reasons when I just like literally decided to leave corporate. That was
Demo,
like,
your line is a bit. I don't know what to call that.
Sorry.
If you could just
can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, sorry. I think it was the Wi-Fi.
Okay.
Anyway, what I was saying is, when did you lose me?
Working for corporates. I think that's what you had started saying.
Yeah. So I was saying when I was working for corporate, I think one of the things that I think was now when I realized that I probably have to leave. It wasn't because everything was perfect in the business sense or in the business world, but it was just that I couldn't multiply myself anymore.
Ooh.
Because now I couldn't. But yeah, I was drained, like, because I just couldn't anymore. Because now, look, I work for a business. I'm a top performer. I'm working hard. And then I still have to work at night to make sure that this money, things are done on time. I just realized, I was like, God, this is time for you to carry me through, cross it. You know, but I mean, in terms of financing my business, which was very capital intensive, I was able to do that because it's easier to get money when you're employed.
Yeah, 100%.
So easy to get money, like as opposed to buying a fancy car, then the same 600, 700K you can get from the bank. Why don't you just put that in your business?
Oh man, you know that is so brilliant. You are spitting game to nuts. Now, at the heart of every business is solving a problem. What problem are you solving?
I think the first problem solving is waste. Is waste in terms of purposeful, like the circular economy, closing the loop. So tires, especially because that's our main product, we're diversifying into plastic as well and use oil. But there's really nothing that tires can decompose. Is that just lying around everywhere? And then for some of us, maybe we in the SADC region had a big influx of like important Japanese cars. People have been buying cars across the world. So now we have heaps and heaps of tires that are lying around and there's no particular way to actually dispose of them in an environmentally friendly way. So that was where my opportunity came. And also that it's a complex process to do that. So that's really the problem I started solving to now say, look, you have a problem with waste? How can I solve it for you? And that's where I come in handy.
Yeah. And how did you verify or validate that the idea you had would be profitable?
Oh, very, very good question. And this also goes back to my varsity days.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I'll say, okay, Bungin, and be humble about this. I always say this, South Africa is, you know, we have so many issues, guys, but South Africa is one of the best, is a world-class country. This economy is properly set up. And the reason I'm saying this is because there is absolutely no business. Okay, I'm not going to sound too much, but there's absolutely no business in the world that at least hasn't started in South Africa. Like, there's someone is doing it in South Africa somewhere.
Yeah.
It is absolutely shocking. So what I'm trying to say is I learned then that there was a plant in South Africa that was doing what I was doing. Then I went to visit it.
Yeah.
Then that changed the ballgame for me to say, look, so, you know, sometimes when you've seen something as an idea and then you see someone actually doing it, then doing it at a proper larger scale, that's where I started benchmarking on that to say, okay, this is practical. Then obviously there's a whole, you learn the industry with, obviously when the manufacturing industry, you have to close the loop. Like I said, it's capital intensive. So first of all, you have to make sure you take off your raw material. You have to now cross-check the quality of the processing plants. Is it, this is ideal? Is it ISO certified? ETC in terms of emissions, is this correct? And then also the last important thing, you have to make sure you have offtakes. You have a client that's willing to buy this thing that you're now going to buy that's so expensive. So those are the things I had to do in the background. But from a simplicity perspective, after seeing it and seeing someone doing it, some other guys doing it, I think in Pretoria, I was like, okay, now this can be done. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I just literally just had to replicate it and build a different model for myself in Lesotho when I came back.
And what were the first few months like? Any near disasters or big wins that shaped your strategy early on?
It's been a learning curve all the way, man. Like it's been a movie all the way. Like from setting up suppliers because I had to build my own value chain.
Ooh.
That was a mission and a half because having to be those people to trust you, these guys are brands. That was a challenge and a half. And then you're also making sure that that works properly. Like, and then moving on to compliance, making sure that you comply with the regulation. There's been so many issues. Even a point where I had to relocate my plant. Like it's been, you know what I'm saying? And making sure people understand what you're doing, making sure that you're doing. It was a lot. So, yeah, that was. So you know what they always say? You keep changing. You have the same goal, but you keep like tweaking every time.
Yes,
it's just really what it is. And then also making sure that efficiency, like realizing what we need to do to ensure that we're producing more, making sure that our quality is good. And then also export issues as well, because obviously our end product is fuel and the fuel we have to sell back to South Africa, making sure that we have the right permits, everything in time, and there's no issues, there's insurance on the road. It's just like I'm just saying, everything has been a learning curve. So the strategy keeps changing because we keep learning, you know. So that's really it. I can't say, and I think, like I did say again, now remember, this is a field. Now, I've been in this field now for it's almost 6 years now. Yeah. But I'm just saying, it wasn't my field. I'm not an engineer.
You're not. Yes. And I wanted to talk about that because engineering and commerce are worlds apart. So, and you know, not only that, right? Some businesses are easy to start. And they're easy to start because, I mean, you feel like, yeah, I can dominate in the space. You went for waste management. That's big boy stuff. That's big boy stuff. Also, in a field or an industry you know virtually nothing about. So how are you then taking up your space and dominating there?
No, but I think it's, first of all, that's the same thing I was saying to you, that once you understand the business from a holistic, connecting the small dots is not a big issue. So let me just make a simple business canvas for you right now. It's unfortunate I don't have a pen and you can't see it.
Also, Shem, I have an idea of business canvas. So I don't know if our listeners will track along, but let's try.
So let's say with simple business canvas, especially in my field. So the first thing to take, before you get into the actual nitty-gritties, is first of all, in any manufacturing business, is your raw material. Can you check that out? So that's the first check.
Your line again there, Demoho. It's getting...
Okay, let me just do this. Is it getting fuzzy again?
Yeah, it is.
No, okay. I just disconnected the Wi-Fi. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can.
All right. So what I was saying is... so let's say we're just building just a simple canvas in my head. So the first thing you check out, this is just across almost a lot of manufacturing processes if you're manufacturing. So the first thing you want to check is, like, I build circles. First thing is raw materials. Are your raw materials there? That's number one. So you check that thing, and that's pretty much business. Then the next thing is, you check off your machinery and its quality and etc. They're going to do what you want it to do. That's the second line. And the last thing, like I said, is your market. Do you have a market for this? Do you have offtakes? Do you have that? So I think for me, that was the baseline of, this is business. I'm not even on an engineering level yet. This is the first baseline to say, this thing can work if I can tick off all these three things. You understand? So, but now the biggest component where obviously I had to hire engineers on was now the actual processing plant, having that done. That's really where I need them. But I still get to oversee the business because I have the holistic view. Do you understand what I'm saying? Yeah. So the engineer will do the work, will ensure that the oil is the right quality is done, etc., etc. But then I still have to make sure the oil is sold. You know what I mean? I still need to make sure that the raw materials are enough. You know, so I and then I make sure that the consumption, that electricity consumption, whatever. But I'm just saying, the holistic view for me was what made me confident, obviously, by God's grace, that I can get into the field. And then it grew from there. So to start learning more into the field, you know, because I'm like, and then you I mean, once you start learning something practically, it becomes also a passion field. And then I think also the other thing that I always laugh about is, I also think I've been an engineer at heart. You know, when I look back, no, but I'm being serious. I'm gonna tell you why. When I look back over the past years, when I was still in high school, I'd always win science fairs, you know, and so like at least top three, you know.
Yeah.
And it was something that was interesting for me, but I never explored it as a field. So but once now I'm in the chemical field and I'm like, okay, this is what it's supposed to do. You know, this, and then I'm like, okay, this makes sense.
That's so brilliant, because what it does is break the limiting belief we have around the kind of businesses we can get into, right? You said at the base of it, you just needed to know how businesses operate.
100%.
There is a market, and the market needs a service.
100%.
How do I deliver the service to them? And that's what you had to figure out. Who does it, how they do it, and all of that is not what you needed to concern yourself about. There is a hungry market. There is a solution at the end. This is how we deliver. And at the heart of it, that's what matters.
100%, man. That's literally what I was saying with that simple canvas.
Yeah.
That's the backbone of the business.
Yeah.
You know? Once we get that done, then everything else just comes through. You just plug it through. And then the funny thing is, once you're there, you will know, you know? I mean, you will know that this doesn't work properly. Yeah. But obviously, someone that's in the field and then someone that's an engineer will come up with better solutions for optimization, for efficiency, and then that's great. That's what you need them to do.
Yeah.
But you would know that you need this, you know. And I think that's just something that emanates. But also on the flip side, just to add more knowledge, I'm also just I'm considering just to do an MBA in renewable, just to just to enhance my knowledge further. But I'm just saying, from practically what I've been doing, it helped me to have the basis, like the background of the basis, like the backbone of the business. Then everything slots in nicely.
Yeah. Temoho, who's your client? Who's your customer?
Well, it's an independent refinery in South Africa.
Okay.
I can't disclose.
And I'm not even asking names, but who do you service? Is it municipalities? Who's your client?
Okay. So I'm gonna build it for you. So obviously, I remember my business is a bit skewed. So I have two different clients.
Okay.
I have a client for my end product, like my end product. And then I have clients for the waste. Do you understand? Because those are also my clients. That's why I was saying the value chain. So obviously I service construction businesses. I service these, and there's the issues to dispose of their waste. I dispose of waste from your normal tire shops, example, your Trent Tire, your Dunlop, you know, because every time you go leave your tires there, these guys have a bulk of tires there. So those are my clients. Those are the value chain that plant, obviously, for the final product. Like I said, I sell the oil to an independent refinery back in to refine other products. That's how I close the loop.
Oh, I love that. That's all I needed. Talk to me about your client's acquisition process. How do you go about getting clients?
Well, I think in this industry, obviously I'm still not, I could say not a big enough. It's a big, it's a big industry with large volumes. So I currently don't need to. I'm currently servicing two clients,
Oh, okay.
which take everything. So like the so that's I think that's enough. I can and I'm actually growing within that barrier because it's a closed loop and it's a very difficult industry to get into. But I thank God that I was able to be
To
able to get in and
penetrate, yeah.
get me and believe that I could deliver a product, you know, that they need. So I think that's that. And I think a lot of reference goes back to benchmarking on other people that have been in the industry, you know, to say,
Yes,
look,
yes.
yeah, they've done this and okay, let's see, you know, let's see if it's really what he can do, you know. So that's that. So it obviously it required a lot of meetings and trying to convince that look, I can do this. And then yeah, I mean, you also know the hardest part to do business is also with it's penetrating with the color of your skin to do business.
Yes.
Right, you know, it's, these guys
Especially
need to
because
believe
construction is still very male and pale.
100%, and
Yeah.
that's what I'm saying. Especially in
Yeah.
the petroleum industry, is
Yeah.
these guys are dominating. So if you come in and they're like, "Who's this guy?" You know, but I think for some of us, by God's grace, that are not. Are supportive of any culture and effectively give any man respect despite their color, and you respect them and they respect you back, and it works out. You know, that's really the biggest thing. Because also another thing is if you fight other people have certain reservations to say, ah, this guy's white and this, so it becomes a problem. So as if you treat everybody equally, then it works out.
Yeah,
So
yeah. What does
I
your
think
org
that.
structure look like? What does your organizational structure look like?
Right, so that's obviously first of all, because now you see the business as business grows, everything just gets so complicated. As much as I wouldn't have wanted it to, but at this stage, it's quite complicated now because now
Yeah.
I have a board now because I have to report. Also now I have shareholders in the business because this is just expensive. Beyond what I could do, and then yeah, so that's that. So there's a board, and then obviously that's me as a CEO, and then another manager, and then there's an operations manager, and then there's obviously an admin person, and then there's two engineers that switch shift, and then there's 10 employees obviously, and then there's a truck driver and another forklift driver. So that's pretty much how my organization structure looks like.
No, you're in business. Business,
For sure.
business. And you know, I'm glad I asked you that question first because I wanted to then find out what conversations you're having about scaling. Because you mentioned two clients, and I'm thinking shareholders want a return. The board wants to see growth. So what conversation are you having about scaling or around scaling?
100%. And literally, that is exactly why this is structured, because we're actually scaling the business. That's why actually investors on board. We actually scaling as we speak. Everything is still under the wrap, so I don't want to say too much about that. But
Yes,
but yes,
please.
that's why the whole organization structure had to change. Because initially it was just me, managing director, and my 10 employees. And obviously, so that was me. But now the ball game has to had to change because now you're accommodating clear reporting strategies. And also, I mean, people have put money into your business, but they want a return. They want transparency. They want to see how they're going to benefit, you know. So that's what that by God's grace is happening. So you know, you'd always think, ah, these things are for other big companies, but you realize
Yes.
it's once you get a stage where you have to
Sure,
grow,
sure,
now you have to report, you know, and
sure.
it kind of also keeps you grounded.
For sure, for sure.
Because they also are just after clear reporting. You can't have funny excuses, you
No.
know. So I feel like it's the right direction for me as well,
You
you know,
know what
because
what you're saying is so apt for me, also so timely, because earlier today I was just thinking about how I take my business to the next level, right? And I've been thinking about agencies to be a part of, because I'm just like today I was so tired, I was so exhausted, I couldn't do anything. I was just like, hey, let me sleep in. But then I was thinking, once you are under an agency and you're working with those people, they won't be, I just want to sleep. So I really appreciate what you're saying about being held accountable and also grounded, because you can't do your own thing now. You are responsible, you are accountable, and you have to give answers at the end of the day.
100%. Yeah. And but I mean, the different thing is, at least you still know it's your business, you know, because this is where the growth comes in place, you know, because also some people will be saying, I don't want to be employed because I don't want to be held accountable. But yeah, because I've been accountable before and I did well, now I think, okay, I'm at a stage where I need to be accountable for something greater.
Yeah,
so that's,
yeah,
it helps me. Like, I get what you're saying. It really helps me as well to get on my toes. You
yeah.
know? To say, look, and also meet deadlines aggressively now. And then, like I said, once you have an investor in the business, I mean, you know what I mean? They want their money back. They want their money back. They want to ensure that everything's running efficiently. Mm. So that's the pressure. It's good pressure. Let me just say it's good pressure.
Yeah. Cash flow, Temoho, the oxygen of every business. How do you keep cash flow steady in a business like yours?
I think the first thing, you know, this is so profound. The first thing is obviously the reason why I've set up the clients I have. So we have the payment terms I've set up work very well for me, because I still do other smaller businesses, but that for this one, this cash flow is critical.
Yeah.
Because now if you're not cash flow positive, you will suffer.
Yes.
So the first thing is the payment terms are quite adequate for me, so that works very well for me. So whenever the delivery is done, then we obviously within 5 working days max we get paid, so that changes everything for me. I think that is really the key for me for cash flow.
Yeah.
Because now that's how I decided to actually export my all back to South Africa, because that then the arrangement we have with the guys works well for my cash flow, if you get what I'm saying. Because you know, you don't want 90 days. And see. Well, if I had to, maybe then I would sit to that. But I think that would stretch me a bit.
It would.
Yeah, because you mean, so now the key thing is we need to ensure that we're always running.
Mm.
So at least when you know that once you've done your delivery, you get paid, it's up to me to make sure that the cash is doing what it's supposed to do, you know?
Yeah.
Like it's turning back into the flow of the business, like you're saying. Just so that I think the key for me was payment terms, like clear proper payment terms, because there's absolutely the worst feeling I can tell you, Bongi, that you probably know is having money that's sitting with people and you can't pay your bills. That is an absolute disaster. You know what I mean? You know, so you have all this money that you work for, but it's on paper, so I don't like that.
Yeah,
I think that just suffocates the business badly.
For sure. And how do you inspire your team to buy into your mission when the work is so tough and sometimes dangerous?
Well, I think two things. It goes back to the question that you had asked earlier about the challenges that we've learned. So, you know, there's always challenges that you learn. So, and also learning from other people across the world. Because, I mean, there's other guys doing maybe plans similar to ours. So you benchmark on things that, number one, make the business more automated and less labor intensive. So I think that has motivated my guys a lot.
Yeah.
Because now if now there's a machine that assists them to do something quicker, you know, they don't have to be too entirely stuck on the job. That's that tweaking that I was talking about, of saying, look, what can I tweak in the business to make sure that things are running efficiently? So I think that's number one. And then number two, it's just also basically, you know, those you know, your pep talks that you have your employees, it helps, you know.
Yeah.
And then also knowing that you're also not, okay, this is now where it goes back to also have being employed, you know. And then when I was employed, I had a good and a bad boss. So I know how to be a bad boss, you know, you also don't want to terrify people.
You
people
don't
need to be able to work, you know.
Yeah.
So I think that I also learned to say, look, if you know, when the guys, and then you know, guys, and also clear as much as an open door policy for guys to say, so when they have challenges, you know, they can just come to you and say, look, boss, we're thinking maybe this, even if they reported it to the manager, you know, they know that they could probably still report something to me. If, you know, that also helps to say, look, we think maybe we could do this differently, and I will decide if it's that. Or, and then I think the other thing is sometimes I just be a part of the team, you know, and I'm just there. And then I'm just helping out where I can, you know, and literally just so that that also makes guys know that you know, sometimes when people think you can't do something yourself, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, I'm being serious. So that also I think makes the guys think, hey, this guy, you know. So sometimes I literally just get on the truck, start the truck, drive all the way to Joburg for a good 5 hours, and it's not very nice. And I get there, deliver, and then they're like, so he can do it,
You know. Yeah.
And I'm there with my driver and the guys, and then obviously the guy, and then they see that this guy can do this thing himself, you know. So those are the things that I do sometimes to try and motivate the team. And then I think just even basic stuff, you know, just always making sure guys are taken care of PPE wise. That also helps. You see, okay, the guys' overalls are getting worn out, you know, you get the nice new overall, they get so the moon, you know. I try.
Yeah. Beyond profits, what impact are you most proud of in your community, your industry, and even in the country?
Well, I think the first thing I am really proud of is I was able to set up a business of this sort, like have a petroleum manufacturing business from WTE in the country, you know. As a young entrepreneur, I really thank God. Like I said, as much as I said, I had the blueprint in terms of the backbone of the business, but when I actually got into the nitty gritties, so when you look back and you say, "Ish, yeah, if I knew, I don't think
I probably wouldn't have done this."
You know, but I want to be honest, but if I knew it was going to be this tough. But now the thing is, that thing of having the blueprint kept me going. So look, but I'd rather fix that. So I think that to me was good. And maybe just also getting recognized by the country. Then I think also with the low unemployment rate for me, that also has helped to have a few guys that I'm employing. But I think my biggest impact, apart from environmental sustainability, to say, look, at least we're disposing of especially tires in an environmentally friendly way. For me, what has been impactful for me is my value chain. You know, I literally have about 60 collection spots. So these are almost 250 families that I'm feeding every day because they bring their tires and they get paid for that. That even sometimes when I have serious challenges and compliance issues, I'd feel bad, you know, when I know that, you know, these people depend on me, you know. Even if it's not fully, they still have other sources of income, but you know, these guys know they can make an extra buck from me, you know. So, and these are literally like literally almost 250 families that I'm feeding, and you know, that kind of just makes you humble, you know, and you think that you're like, what? You know, so and then when like I said, when we had challenges and we had to close down the plant, and you know, you just get banging calls from these guys, these suppliers saying, hey, when are you coming to collect these things? Now we don't know what to do with these things. Where are you? You know, that to me was a very humbling moment to say, look, maybe this, I'm doing this beyond me. You know, this is something that by God's grace is really impacting these guys positively, you know.
And if Buhlweki succeeds beyond your wildest dreams, what does the future of the country's environment and job market look like?
That's a very interesting question. But I think the prospect of it all is obviously increased capacity in terms of employment. You know what I mean? That's the first line. And then impact, like I said, from sustainability, like increasing our collection spots, spreading further into the mines. So like it's almost like setting up a mini Sasol, if I'm saying that, then probably where we're looking at in the future, because that's already what we quote unquote are at a smaller scale. But I mean, that's basically saying we would have a mini like a refinery, and that the impact was just bespoke, you know.
Sure. I love that. And I'm thinking about an aspiring entrepreneur or somebody who's sitting on an idea right now. What would you say to that person who's absolutely afraid to take the first step?
No, I think it just goes back to what I said initially, Mungi, that those that seek really shall find. You need to seek. I think people don't seek hard enough. You know, there's a lot of seeking that has to be done, you know. I sound like I know what I'm talking about now, but this has been so hard. You know, it's been and also I've been losing a lot of money, you know, and that also the key in terms of research, in terms of developing the product. Sometimes things are not working. You know, there was a point where we couldn't produce enough. There's a point where would go to the client and the client, our quality is rejected, you know what I mean? Because now the quality is not good enough. And that time we've had costs, you know, that time we incurred costs. We've drove all the way to Joburg, you know, there's employees that have to be paid, and then we ran a loss. You know, there's been instances like that. Do you understand what I'm saying? It hasn't just been an easy journey. That time you've lost, there's been so many issues. I've been fined by SARS and the border. There's been so, it's not easy.
Yeah,
do you understand?
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? So especially because I'm exporting a product, so I need to comply. If I'm not complying, the compliance will chop my hand. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And with those things, they act as stepping stones to say, okay, this was wrong. How do I fix this? How do I fix it? You know what I mean? So it's like I'm saying, it's just, it needs more than just a dream. It needs you to have the faith and that you can get through, because it has been easy, you know. And then there's those days where you just want to say, okay, I think I'm tired.
Yes.
And then I think I always say to a friend of mine, I don't know how other business people survived. I don't believe in God, because that's really the oxygen of this thing.
Ooh, let me tell you something.
I'm telling you. I just get to a point where I just tell God and say, God, this is a time, you know, when you say, those that wait upon you shall renew their strength. I need that.
You know what's so weird?
It's gone.
You know what's so weird? I told you I woke up this morning so exhausted. Do you know what my prayer was? Mm-hmm. Lord, renew my strength. I was so tired.
Honestly.
Yes, it's literal.
I need that strength right now, because I cannot breathe.
Yeah.
And I promise you, Bongi, He renews the strength. You sleep. He mounts you high again, you run, and you not get weary. For me, that's really been the oxygen for the challenges, you know. And then he starts giving you small wins there, and then those work as stepping stones. So all I can say is we need to prepare. You need to prepare and be ready for the challenges that come, you know. Yeah. And then every time there's a challenge, be malleable to change. You know, there's so many things that I thought I would have done in this business, or what I would do. And then I learned on the ground that it's different. You know, there's different ways to work around it. It's not an easy path, you know. So I think that's, you know, when you started off and I was like, Bongi's overselling this thing, when you were saying, on the introduction, when you're saying it's about grit, it's about hard work. It really is. There's just a point you're just holding on grit to say, what can I do? And then also seeking help, you know, help helps a lot. There's points where I have to get consultants to assist me that have been in the industry, that know the industry better. You know what I mean? Because, and then they come assist you to be more efficient, because then you're having problems and it's not working out.
Yes.
So, and then there's so many other issues, because like, I'm just throwing darts in the air. Then there's also fallout in business as well.
Then
you guys don't see eye to eye anymore. You know what I mean? Because I literally started the business with other people. I founded the business, and then I had like two shareholders initially when we started the business. Like I said, it was a fallout with another guy, but at least we sorted that out and we're still in good terms, because I had to pray about it, and it wasn't nice. Those are things that you get, you know? And then, like, I keep telling you, there's so many issues. You get sued. It's business is a movie, you know, but by God's grace, you get through, and then you learn, you know. You learn and say, okay, that I shouldn't have done this way, or that I should do this. So I'm not even saying maybe some people don't have to go through what we've been going through, but I can just say I think it makes sense why people get rewarded so much when they win in business, because they've gone through so much. So I think that's what I can tell. I just think just be ready to learn all the time and find solutions. And then some of the solutions you might just be have to go the extra mile yourself. You know what I mean? I'm just gonna remember something. I just remembered something that I remember, like when I had an issue with the regulator, like I said, with SARS, and the issue was the permit that I had used had a different description. Okay. So now that was attracting duties and taxes, you understand? And then we didn't know. Nobody knew which permit I need to use because no one has been exporting this product across the SADC region. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, no one has done what I'm doing. Like, most of the guys aren't exporting the product like I'm doing. You understand? Mm-hmm. So now, even the refinery doesn't know, even I don't know. Now we had to look for that and find the right permit to use. And that was, and now even the guys that are clearing agents that are consulted didn't know what to do. I remember I was telling God that time, like, but God, we can't have put so much money and be here and we can't find a permit. How are the guys doing it overseas? What's the issue? What should we do? You know, then we had to go through that tariff book and do this. And then till we found it, you know what I mean? So I'm just saying some of the things you have to go the extra mile. Like, yeah. I literally went to pull all nighter, you know, there's just to make sure that we're plugging to the right place. So it seems like a small thing, but you realize like it was very difficult to get across that bridge. You
know? Yeah.
We had to get across that bridge and we did.
And now we're
stable.
Sure. You know?
So I'm just saying it's a small thing that I just remembered that was just so terrifying.
Yeah.
To say, nobody in the industry knew. Do you understand? Mm. Nobody knew. And now what are we going to do? You have to fix it.
Yeah. You have to. But you know what? As we wrap up, because we are out of time, I love this conversation because from the very beginning, you were set on reminding us that wealth is hidden in the very problems we complain about every day. You know, when you mentioned earlier, you said we want to find solutions elsewhere, but it's right here around you and the things you do and the things you're seeing around you. And that with vision and courage, which is another thing that you mentioned, and especially now at the end, the courage piece, even a discarded tire can become a ticket to opportunity and to jobs. I mean, 250 families, and that's outside of your employees. That is massive.
100%.
Massive. And I just hope that everyone who's listening tonight, that this conversation pushed them to see that the waste around you, and I mean this literally and figuratively, can be something that they can build with and build something sustainable and something that will outlast them even. So thank you so much for coming through and sharing your journey and your experience with us. This was very insightful.
No, thank you so much, Bongi, and also just bouncing the thoughts and just making us remember what we stand for, you know.
Yeah.
So I have the opportunity to have this conversation with you, and give glory to God over all for him sustaining us to keep on moving, you know.
Oh, awesome. Have a lovely, lovely evening and all the best with building a Cecil of your own.
Thank you so much.
Cheers. And with that, my people, I am Nompumelelo Lombonani, and I hope you have just made sense of your business, literally. Fresh mercy tomorrow. Ciao for now.
You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.